You're listening to The Plug with Neil Griffiths.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Plug Podcast with me, Neil Griffiths. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Before we get into it, as we always do, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you are listening to this episode from. And be sure to follow us on all of our socials, TikTok, Insta, and YouTube, at theplug.podcast. It's a very big week in music, and I am so stoked to be joined by one of Australia's best to ever do it, because his new album is out today. My guest this week is legendary Australian songwriter, the frontman of Midnight Oil, Mr. Peter Garrett. Peter's new album, The True North, is out everywhere right now via Sony Music. You can check it out on Spotify. I was lucky enough to sit down with Peter, funnily enough, at Sony HQ in Sydney, to have a wide-ranging conversation with the great man himself, as well as talking about how this album came together. Keep in mind that his first solo album came out right before the Oils got back together in 2017. We look back on Peter's career, obviously, with the Oils throughout the years and how he managed to bring this incredible album together. And yes, of course, we did speak about Midnight Oil and potential plans for new music and what's next for Garrett, both as a solo songwriter and with the Oils. To kick this album off, Peter is also performing all around the country. He kicked the tour off last night in Canberra. He'll be moving on to play shows in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, Cairns, and Brisbane. Head to petergarrett.com.au. All right, let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, here's my chat with Peter Garrett on The Plug Podcast. All right, welcoming to The Plug Podcast, one of the Australian music icons, Mr. Peter Garrett. Thanks for coming on the show, sir.
No worries, mate.
I should say, actually, before we start, that thank you, Sony, because we're in their head office right now in Sydney, and they've set us up in a nice boardroom.
They have.
I appreciate that, guys. But Peter, I know you've been on the press tour. How's it feel to be back in the swing of things?
I'm really liking talking to people about something which means a lot to me, and even though I've yarned on and off for many years about stuff, and you know, you might think I've talked myself silly. I probably have. I'm still doing it, and it's been a lot of fun. But it's also making me think about the record, you know, and talking about it to people is something I enjoy to do.
Yeah. As we're recording this, I think we're just before a month away from release. Yeah. How are you feeling a couple of weeks out?
I think every artist, to give them their credit, because we all try and pour everything we have into what we're doing, says, hey, look, this is great. You know, I want to share it with you. It's wonderful. I've been doing that on and off for many years, but I am at the stage where it's, for me, almost like a miracle, bit of lightning. It's like being, you know, as Keating, former Prime Minister, way back in the day said, you know, I got, you know, kissed on the bum by a rainbow, you know, that there's music. It's not a dry field, and you never know when the muse is going to come, and for some reason, whatever, I'm not entirely sure, when I came off the road with the Oils, I just had this really strong feeling to get some songs down and to get into a studio and to make a record. And as that unfolded, found that there was plenty of inspiration, lots to say. I had a pretty clear sense about how I wanted to sound, and I've ended up really happy with what I've done. So no complaints over this part of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that you've been on a press tour for most of today, so I'll get the most beige, mundane, basic question out of the way, which is the how, what, when, where, why. And you said there... It started after the Oils wrapped up in end of 2022, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Was it kind of completely post-tour? Was it during? Did you feel compelled to write?
Yeah, no. Well, a couple of songs were, like we all had, Oils always had lots of songs, lots of people writing songs, as you'd expect, and a couple of them were in half form, demoed, I think one of them, we hadn't quite sort of finished, so I sort of parked that in the back pocket and I thought, well, there you go. And then as I left the stage at the Horden in Sydney that night, I thought, I still feel like there's a lot of energy in my system here and I need to honour that. And so I had a couple of ideas. I went home, I played a bit of guitar to myself, and then I thought, well, I know what I want to say. Let me see if I can find some songs to say that and catch the moment whenever it comes. Basically worked the songs up over the next couple of months, pretty much recording stuff on my iPhone on Voice Memo, then running up to Martin Rotzi's place, who played guitar in Midnight Oil all that time, and just running them with him. He can play guitar a lot better than I can. And then sharing them with people who we were going to record with in a way which is not saying, look, this is how the song goes, because they're pretty simple, but this is what the song is about. This is what we're trying to say. We're not going to let the computer or the expectation or the plot line or even me dictate how it goes. We just want it to be organic and real and emotional and create this space in the studio for it and see what we end up with.
So how quickly between that last Horton show, how long was it between that and you picking up the guitar or starting to make phone calls?
About 48 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because thinking back...
Maybe a bit longer, but
yeah,
pretty much straight away.
Thinking back to a version of Now, the first solo album, which came out in 2016, I want to ask though, because I was on that, I forget what it even was, but it was a boat in 2017 to announce Midnight Oil's final world tour.
Yeah, were you on the boat?
I was on the boat. I think it was very awkward and small, wasn't it? And you guys were like just awkwardly at the front while Richard Wilkins was just asking you questions. You're all just like huddled together. It was really weird, but it was good. But just thinking back to that album, given that came out in 2016, the boat experience happened in 2017.
Yeah.
How quickly, or I guess at the time, did you think that first solo album was a one and done? Because I got to assume that Oil's getting back together to talk about a final world tour wasn't something that happened overnight.
No, it wasn't. You're right, Nick. But I think, look, I didn't expect to make a version of Now, that first solo record. That was a folk record that I made to process what had happened of 10 years of not being able to make music effectively when I was a member of parliament and a minister and all of that. Mm-hmm. And once I'd made it, I didn't think about... I mean, we went out and played it and it was fun to play to people, but I didn't think that much more about it. The Oils thing, as it emerged, did take a lot longer to take shape and form, and we had to find our meeting place to do that. COVID, Macarada Project, mm-hmm. Great Circle, a lot of people coming. Oh, okay, there's an audience still there, very strong audience. Better go back and do some more playing if we want. So it became all-encompassing, but it wasn't... It wasn't a battle or a struggle, I think. I think all of us, in our different ways, just recognised how incredibly fortuitous it was that we still had a lot of respect and a lot of desire to try and make the songs work on stage and go off and play them to people. And you know what? You don't need a lot of time in another part of the world to realise how goddamn lucky you are to be in a rock band where people pay money to show up and watch you play songs. Mm. I mean, please. Mm.
So that first solo album, though, it's fair to say that there wasn't a, you know, if you got in the room with the Oils and they said we want to do this big tour, was there a party that's like, oh, I've got this solo record, it's done really... Not at all?
No, okay. Not at all. No.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Then thinking about the Oils since then, right? Macarada Project obviously was huge. Resist does what it does. The call to end the Oils then and there. Comfortable with that decision, Neil?
Yeah, no, I think it's not an easy one to make, and I think all of us at different times have, you know, had a few dark nights of the soul about it, partly because it's so special, the fact that we've managed to create this thing over time. We've obviously got a lot of people who know the band and who respond to what the band does, and we're brothers. It is like a family, actually, sure. Like literally like a family. So, you know, the squabbles and the makeups and the getting it on and whatever, it works for that reason, I think. But we've been, and I was even when I was in Parliament, intensely protective, you might say stubborn and proud, very one-eyed about our thing. Mm. Never had anything to do with popularity, really. Never had much to do with whether we could find an audience in other parts of the world. We were surprised when that happened. I think I was surprised when 200 people showed up, you know, at some pub somewhere. And it was really never lost sight, and we even if we had to remind ourselves of the fact that the reason we started was because we, as musicians, we believed in the simple act of creating the best songs we could at the time and then going out and playing them to the max. So saying goodbye to that and that shared vision is a big thing. Mm. But the truth of it is that the Oils were and are, if you like, there's no halfway house on that stage, you know, when the band plays. And I'm not saying it's going to be a halfway house when I do or when Rob or Jim do their thing, but like you get those people up there and it's got a certain dynamic and an energy and it's like a primal animal, you know, once it gets going. And maintaining that level of intensity over hours and hours, night after night, year after year, You're kidding yourself if you think you're going to be able to do it in your 70s. You're not. You know, you can do something else by all means, but you want to leave that thing in its best shape as possible. You got to decide it before everyone else decides for you.
I'll come back to the oils in a minute, but given what you said there about, you know, wanting to put it on the shelf or admitting that there is a time when it comes, does it surprise you then that you kicking into this second solo album happened as quickly as it did?
Yeah, I'm genuinely surprised.
Yeah.
I really am. I'm very surprised. I mean, you know, I thought I knew that music would still be a part of my life, but I truly expected, like I did when I left the Parliament, that I'd probably do other things. I mean, I am involved in other stuff. I'm obviously very interested in environment issues and Indigenous issues, and I spend a bit of time in remote Australia and Northern Australia, the true north, you know, Northern Australia. But this time around, I thought, okay, I mean, I really can hang it up for a while, and then maybe I go and do something down at the local pub and with some mates and we have a bit of fun. I didn't in any way expect a surge of creativity and a lot of juice, you know, to do it. And, I mean, you got to catch the raindrops when they fall.
Yeah, and I know you've said that you didn't intentionally want to make this a record, you know, about things that need to change or activism or political messages, but that did kind of happen. Did you lean into it, or was there a part of you going, ah, don't do this, or try and steer away from it?
Just have to, I can't help myself, really.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, there's no secrets about the sort of person that I am and what, you know, sort of things that sort of pump my tires up. I'm not a showbiz guy, really. I'm a politics guy. You know? And so it was inevitable that was going to be in the songs, but I didn't. I was conscious of only one thing. I think this is the right way to say it, is that I was very conscious that I've said and done a lot of politics, and I've had the privilege of serving at high level. I still care a lot about it, but I wanted to honour the art and the soul of music making. And even if it just had been going na-na-na-na-na-na-na, if it worked, I was happy to go with it. And I wanted the songs to have a personal side to them, maybe a little bit more reflective, and to literally almost be time capsules of the moment that I happen to be in. I mean, someone else could have been in my skin and written these songs, I think, but it happened to be me. So when I was at whatever point I was at, I thought, well, that's the song, that's probably the words, let's just see if we can record it and what we end up with.
Yeah, I mean, your activism is something that's never really wavered. I mean, and you've still been heavily involved in it. As early as last year, you were a big advocate of the Yes campaign. When we talk about this album and things needing to change and the outcome of that referendum, we still have some ways to go, don't we?
Yeah, and I think we do have some ways to go. And we, you know, sometimes we're two steps forward and one back, and sometimes we're a one forward and two back. I think that was, unfortunately, backward. But, you know, without getting too much into cliches, it's the journey's a long one, you know, and but you've got to be on the road, putting one foot after the other to get there. So, yeah, we've got a ways to go on things. On the underlying spirit, if you like, or ideas in the True North, I'm just wanting to let people know and try and reach them where I'm being reached by what I'm thinking about. I mean, you know, there's always a danger that you can just rabbit on and talk about stuff that people know about and think, oh, yeah, or whatever. But I really tried to find that personal centre spot just to give the record as much humanity as I could, really. I think that was pretty important.
Is there any part of you that could be swayed into going back near politics?
Are we talking about formal electoral politics, for example? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, look, you know, that's a big part of my life. I'm proud of it, you know. I mean, a lot of people went, he's in a suit, he's in a political party, he's in the government, you know, it all sucks. Well, whatever. Sorry, that's what makes Australia a great place, you know, if governments do jobs well. But there's plenty of people coming through who are well-equipped and well-skilled to do that work, and that's well behind me.
Is there, I know we're stroking the ego now a little bit, but thinking back at that time, did it ever feel uncomfortable for you as being recognised as one of Australia's greatest rock frontmen, putting on the suit, going into Parliament House?
Not for me, but I know it was for many people. It was there was a part of it which they just couldn't quite, you know, square the circle, if you like. People really didn't know, and I mean, why would they know that I'd spent the last 10 years going there? You know, I'd been a lobbyist, I'd been a president, you know, of a conservation organisation. I've been on the International Board of Greenpeace. I've been campaigning in South America, you know. I've been doing a bunch of stuff, and luckily, you know, Rob and Jim were churning out the songs, you know.
They were still doing it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was incredible, you know, and it was a wonderful part of that relationship that they gave me the space to be an activist and someone that was interacting with politics a lot, sometimes uncomfortable, but had to be done. And then there was this incredible thing to go back into and to be a part of. So I knew what it was going to be like, but I think a lot of other people were like, he's wearing a suit, you know. Yes, that's what you wear in Parliament House. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is there anything alarming to you about a songwriter who has achieved as much as you have achieved? Like we talk about the politics aside, what you've achieved with Oils as a solo writer, and here we are talking about a second album. The way that the music is made, the way music promoted, we're doing a podcast right now. Like, it wasn't so long ago, you get a single on the radio and you hope it blows up. Yeah. Now we want to get a song on TikTok.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that now, promoting this album?
Look, you know, I'll stumble through with the help of the wonderful people at my record company and you know, great management people. And I mean, I'm the first one to take advice. There's no way I could pretend I know. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of TikTok for other reasons.
Mm.
The sort of reasons that are seeing governments of the world have a look at it and go, not sure about this, Chinese ownership and so on and so forth. But in terms of the medium, I think a part of me is I can't change who I am after all these years at all. What you see is literally what you get.
Mm.
The volume levels, the warts, you know, the trills, the tops, the bottoms, the middle eights, the words, whatever. But I love what I do and I get myself in a place where I feel that it's very, very intense and special for me to be able to share that with other people. So how we get that out there, whether it's yarning to yourself on a podcast, because I hardly ever listen to podcasts, but I'm just starting to now,
mm-hmm.
or a bit of social media to let people know what's going on. Yeah, it's 2024, I get it.
Are you comfortable with the current music landscape? And by that I mean, you know, you worked with a lot of young artists on the Makarrata Project. If you were a 20-year-old releasing this album now, knowing what you know, would you be fearful for what's to come? Do you think it's in a healthy spot?
No, I don't think it's in a healthy spot at all, but it doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of healthy shoots showing up all over the place, and there always will be. So you got to disengage the idea of is it like it was, and if it's not, why not, and could it be made better, which I think is an important discussion. It's part of your question, and I'll answer that by saying it's changed completely. And in changing, it's given over a lot of power to algorithms, to Spotify. It's much more transient than it was, but you've got much more reach than you ever had if you manage to touch that chord. Unless you're really brilliant and exceptional, in which case those people and super talent, they're going to, you know, they'll prevail in any setting, whether it's around a campfire or, you know, getting blasted from Mars. Otherwise, I think your shelf life's probably pretty short. But in terms of creativity and, you know, younger musicians coming through and writing songs and doing it in whatever form, whatever genre, amazing. You know, there's just stuff happening. I don't try and pretend to be on top of it all the time. I haven't got the time to do that. I like listening to some new music, but I'm not wedded to the idea of being... It's nuts for me to think that I'm on top of it.
Mm.
But I hear enough to know that people still make great music.
Yeah.
You know? I really like some of what I hear, and I hope that they're having a go. The second part of the answer, though, is to do with where Australian artists are at, and that is in not such a good place for most of them, not all.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the charts aren't the charts in the way that they used to be, but there's still a representation of what's getting listened to and played, but more listened to. And it's extraordinary that there are so few Australian artists on the Australian charts.
Still. Yeah, I think I saw recently Vance Joy's Riptide, which is a 10-year-old song.
Exactly.
Was one of the only singles in the top 40 as of November.
I know, man. Can you believe it?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
What... Yeah. This is not for you to solve, but what can...
No, it's for Tony Burke to solve.
Yeah, sure, yeah. But what can Australian music fans do to curb that? I mean, like, we're not going to pretend no one's listening to Australian music because we know that people are passionate about it. But how do we get it ahead of... No offence to Taylor Swift because I love her, but how do we get some Australian songs in between the 300 Taylor Swift songs in the charts?
Yeah. Well, that is the Australian music industry's biggest question by far, and it's one that... I'm starting to think more about than I had before. I mean, I was aware of it, but I'm starting to really give it some serious thought because I'm in the middle of it again. So I think part of it is, unfortunately or fortunately, up to the government to decide what and how it can do and help Australian artists get footholds. Another part is the regulatory mechanism around those big delivery platforms and networks. I mean, the tech codes have pretty much got away with murder when you think about it. Well, radio.
Sure.
Radio and media, like old mainstream media and telly, is regulated far more tightly than what these people are. And they've got no loyalty to Australia. I mean, they might say, oh, we're creating, you know, a bigger platform for audiences in other places. But I don't really buy that. They don't care. Mm. And what we saw happen with Warner's and TikTok recently is, yep, a really good example that actually they don't care at all. So how do we... For fans, I think it's just, you know, curate your Aussie playlists, you know, share.
Mm.
But the bigger picture is probably it's going to require some pretty hefty intervention from government.
Do you think, again, with this album, now as a creator and an advocate, do you want to be more involved in the creative side? Are you thinking about a third album, or are you more invested now in how do we showcase the great music coming out of this country? Or both?
Yeah, probably both. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to playing it. I'm proud of the record, and I think all the people who worked on it with me, including Tony Buchan, who produced it with me, and Martin helping, and, you know, everybody. I mean, some albums come together really well. Some are hard work, some are fractious, some are sweet. This one was a really beautiful, sweet, open, collaborative exercise, and I think it sounds like that, so I'm looking forward to playing it. My deep passions are probably more at the side of working on landscape scale change in parts of Australia that I think, you know, really need a leg up or a look up, and helping and working with people who find it challenging because they're either remote or they're dealing with big governments or big companies. That's sort of my skill set in a way.
Mm.
But yeah, hey, I'm an Aussie artist and I care about it a lot. And I've been involved in campaigns in the past. So if people want me to be involved again, I'm happy to.
You were surprised that this second album came. Do you think a third album is years away? Do you think it's even in the conversation? You know, I know it's unfair because we're talking about the second album. It hasn't come out yet. But because you've been creatively inspired, do you think you have more to say, or do you think this is a nice way to take a break, Peter, is where I'm going with this.
Not really the taking a break. It's, I mean, I said
something you do.
Yeah, and I hear people talking about retirement, and I just think that word just really honestly makes me want to bang my head up against the wall.
Sure.
Big time. So that's unlikely to happen. I'd like to play it out and then create a bit of space to see whether there's more to come. I suspect that there probably is, because I've enjoyed the writing. I mean, look, the truth of it is that I was spoiled rotten in the oils, you know. I was in a band with two very accomplished songwriters, a very good arranger, people who'd played together and you know, been with one another since they were at school. And great learning for me, you know. Yeah, and I mean, I made my contributions and had my songs here and there and was, you know, occasionally, you know, being a bit brutal with the edits and whatever. But to have the space to do it yourself at this stage when you've got a lot of things rolling around in your head, but you also know that music itself is quite special and it's still super special to me, you know, like, really? You can't bottle this stuff, you know. Maybe there's more.
Going back to the oils for a second, because I think Resist actually in 2 days will have been 2 years since it came out.
Is that right?
The 15th, right? The 15th of February.
Wow.
I know I'm looking around like everyone knows the day. But I'm pretty sure it was 2 years to the day in 2 days. Given that did what it did, right? It tops the charts. You guys have an incredible tour. It is the final tour. I know you've said that it's likely that's it. Do you think Oils play live together again? You know the follow-up question is going to be, what about new music? But let's start with,
yeah.
Do you think it'll kind of be a when you want to, when the AFL or NRL decide they want to bring you on stage for the grand finals? What kind of deal do you think it is right now?
Well, it takes a lot of people. A lot of ducks have to be lined up for that to happen.
Sure.
So if the AFL decided that they were going to do nighttime entertainment like the Super Bowl,
sure,
I would definitely have my hand up. And we've had negotiations and discussions with them in the past, which this is the first time I ever talk about it, but I'm happy to say it.
Mm.
That's always been my condition.
So it has to be nighttime. Is there a particular reason?
Yeah, because I think that you will get the production values. I think it really heightens the experience of the entertainment, which is as big a part of the Super Bowl as what the game is.
Sure.
Now, I'm a massive AFL fan, And I totally get that for most AFL fans, it's not about the entertainment at all. It's about the game, and it gets played on Saturday Arvo at that time, you know, wherever it might be, usually the MCG. Okay, all of that taken. But you look at, I mean, I haven't seen the Usher thing particularly, but I've seen enough of them to know, why can't we do something at that level? We could do it. We've got the cameras and mm-hmm. the people and the skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got big budgets, I know. We should be able to do the same thing. And for me, that would be a big proud moment, you know, for us to be able to put on something which, when it was shown in other parts of the world, would really move people. I don't think you get that at daytime. It's just really hard to, in the middle of the afternoon, sort of get that intensity, that light feeling, the dark light, the lights, the cutting the air, the excitement, the spotlights when you know, when the drones and the helicopters come over the G, and then, yeah, the funny, rockets go off.
You know. It's funny you say that because, yeah, you're right. Like, it's obviously always been in the daytime. But I think when the Killers did that very famous, they did some Midnight Oil songs.
Yeah.
The post-game performance was at nighttime.
That's right.
And it did feel like it was kind of elevated.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I think, went viral as well.
Yeah, it did. But it was still relatively limited. It had small bandwidth. It wasn't in a big high production value setting. And it wasn't in the middle of the field.
Sure.
You know, which is where you've got to be. So, I mean, I get it. But I also think, if you want entertainment to be world class, or in this case Australian first class, and all the people that have played have done a cracking job of it, but do it at night, and then if we're still standing, ask us.
So granted, it takes a lot of people to tick this off. All it would take is to be nighttime.
There's a lot more that goes with it, but yeah.
Okay. And again, the follow-up question here, what about new recordings? All recordings that may have been done during the Resist process that maybe are still yet to be released?
Yeah, look, I think there's some there's a doco that's being made, which has been underway for some time, and at some stage that's going to emerge. I think it's on about edit number 68.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, it's getting better.
400 to go.
Yeah, exactly. And we recorded a fair bit of stuff on the last runaround. I don't think there are any outtakes, but there's quite a bit of music sitting there, which at some stage people will get to. I mean, people have been doing their own thing, and which is pretty much the pattern. You know, you finish an Oils thing and everyone goes, great, now I'm going to go and do something else, which is what people have done. And I don't think we're focused on it, Nick, at this point in time specifically. You're asking the question. The answer is watch this space. I think it's very hard and unlikely, but things may happen.
And just with that documentary, is that specifically about this last tour and album, or is this overarching?
Big Midnight Oil story from pretty much day one.
Wow, okay. Yeah. And tentative release.
I think they're trying to get it out by the end of the year.
Wow, okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, coming back to this album again, I think you've already played some shows. You've got a big tour coming up.
Yeah.
What are the plans post that? Do you want to tour this far and wide? Are you thinking international?
I'm not thinking about any of that stuff particularly. The way in which my life works is a little different from that. In other words, I'm dealing with what I would describe as my legacy life.
Sure.
So my legacy life is working with people in remote areas, is trying to stop governments that maybe I'm not a part of doing things which I think are bad, or where we've done something good that they're trying to undo. It may be long-term vision about a part of Australia's environment, which is really special and you want to take great care of it. Very interested in doing that kind of work and working with other organisations, perhaps sometimes helping them, maybe giving them advice or mentoring a little bit, that sort of stuff. It all happens on the side. So if someone came along and said, look, we really want you to go, we'll use Finland as an example, for some reason it's come up today, but you know, we want you to go and play in Finland, I'd say, oh yeah, look, I'm interested, let's see if that can happen. And I'm not disengaging from music at all at this point. I'm actually like, I'm in deep.
Mm.
So, but there may be no demand. People might just, you know, be sort of sighing and throwing the Kleenex in the corner and going next.
With this album and with what you're doing on the side, do you think that will ever happen? Because you seem so passionate about both. I don't think you're going to be slowing down anytime soon.
It doesn't feel like it to me.
Yeah.
I know I must do, you know, because it's the law. It's the law of the world.
Mm.
there's no way around it. But no, in my head, body another thing, but in my head, definitely not.
Well, unfortunately for you, this album is really, really good. So I expect a follow-up at this point, unfortunately for you.
Well, mate, thank you. That's very kind. You know, the funny thing is, and I said it to some of the Masoni mates upstairs. Like, usually you finish a record, and it's always been the case with the Oz records or with stuff. And even when I've been on other records, like even when I did Sun City, you know, with Little Steven and everybody, you listen back and you think, ah, I wished, you know, I'd done that, or I wished. I can listen back to the True North, and I think it's down to Tony's mixing, actually. I think he really mixed, really beautiful mixing technique. I'm not hearing unfinished business, so I'm feeling thankful and grateful that I've been able to get to that point with it, particularly at this stage of the game. And I'm happy to play it to people however and whenever, and we've got a mighty band to play it. As to what happens next, I'm quite happy for the universe to make those decisions.
Yeah, because listening to a version of Now, that does feel like, you know, it's a folk project. It's something you wanted to get out of your system.
Yeah.
This feels like something new. And again, I'm sorry.
I'm glad you said that, actually. Well, no, mate, I love hearing that.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that, because now it feels like you've got to pursue this properly now.
Oh, well, I now have my instructions.
It's pretty cool.
Thank you, sir.
That is pretty cool. Does it feel like you're at the beginning of a new chapter here? As opposed to doing, I've got these songs that I want to get off my chest. This is now the start of something new.
Look, it certainly feels like the performing, playing, sort of being anywhere, doing anything with music part is still quite real. And I mean, the easy thing is that Martin and I can, you know, grab a couple of acoustics and go and play a stand-up somewhere, or, you know, do something for a charity or play on the street. I mean, getting the Oils all in one place at the one time, getting the Beast revved up, you know, it's a time-consuming exercise. It's a big thing. And then you've got to deal with all the numbers of people. This is obviously not on that scale at all. Mm. So it not being on that scale, it's nice. It gives you a little bit of freedom to suck it and see, and also to play more intimate places to people. But other than that, no, I'm not a planner in that way, and I'm not thinking about where it might end up. I'm just amazed that I've got to this stage.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for coming on the show. Congratulations on this album.
Thanks,
Nick. I can't wait for people to hear it. Good luck with the tour.
Thanks, mate.
And I know the AFL higher-ups are big fans of this podcast, so if you're listening, guys, let's get the Oils on a nighttime show, please.
Damn right.
Peter, thanks so much, man.
See ya.
To watch full episodes of The Plug Podcast, head over to the official YouTube page at theplug.podcast and hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with all of the video content. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at theplug.podcast for all episode announces, teasers, and giveaways.